Well, good morning all. My name is Bruce Gammage. I am the manager of the Provincial Infection Control Network here in British Columbia, Canada, and I'm also the president-elect of Chica Canada. Paul Weber asked me if I would be willing to host today's teleclass just as a change to give a few more people a chance to be able to do this kind of thing and to spread the word, and I really appreciate this opportunity. So on behalf of Weber Training, and also today's teleclass is sponsored by Virox Technologies, I'd like to welcome you all to the talk that we're going to have today. Our speaker today is Dr. Chuck Gerba. Dr. Gerba is a professor of microbiology and environmental science at the University of Arizona. He obtained his PhD in microbiology from the University of Miami, Florida, and was a faculty member of the Department of Virology and Epidemiology at Baylor College of Medicine in Texas from 1974 to 1981. He currently conducts research on the transmission of pathogens through the environment, and his research encompasses the transmission of pathogens by water, food, and fomites. He's been the author of more than 500 articles and several books in environmental microbiology, risk assessment, and pollution science. So without further ado, it gives me great pleasure to introduce Dr. Chuck Gerba, who will be speaking to us today on the role of fomites in disease transmission in public environments. So take it away, Chuck, from wherever you are in Panama.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot for get the opportunity to talk to you today about the role of fomites in disease transmission in public places. Actually, you might be quite surprised how little we know about what type of exposure to microorganisms you get in public places. It's an area that really hasn't received a lot of detailed scientific study in the past. But just to refresh your memory, looking at slide two, is that 80% of all common infections, that's cold, flu, diarrhea, can be spread through the environment. That's air you breathe, the water you drink or swim in, food, and fomites. Basically, if we're looking at those three categories, that's about 800 million infections per year in the United States of either diarrhea, cold, or flu, or other respiratory infections. And all of these potentially can be spread to the environment. What are fomites? In the next slide, I kind of have the textbook definition. Basically, we're going to define that as any animate object, desktops, doorknobs, pencils, that can be involved in disease transmission. So we're really talking about surfaces largely when we're talking about fomites. The next slide is kind of an overview of the role of fomites in transmission of common infections, particularly respiratory diseases. The idea is here somebody coughs, sneezes, droplets can settle on a surface, or an individual can break his sneeze or coughing by bringing his fingers to his face and then depositing droplets directly on his hand. He then may interact with different fomites, such as a phone as an example, computer, desktop, doorknob, toilet seat. And other individuals may come in contact with those same surfaces and pick them up on their hands and then move the disease organisms to right where they want to be. Your nose, mouth, or eye can always be involved in transmission of common respiratory infections and diarrhea. The next slide, I think it's important to reiterate how often this occurs. There have been studies that indicate that a small child, a child under two, for example, brings their fingers to their face about 81 times an hour. Young children really haven't really discovered what food is, and in some ways they're just searching to what everything tastes like, smells like, and that, and they bring everything to their face. Of course, that reduces as children get older. It's about 42 times for children 2 to 5, but that's still fairly frequent. It's happening pretty much about every couple of seconds in that age group. And I've done some calculations from studies have done on exposure analysis, that a small child actually ingests the equivalent of about 6 kitchen floor tiles worth of dirt on the floor every day. If you look at how much really is going into their mouth and they're swallowing, children are always swallowing dust and dirt all day, and it's quite an amount when you start looking at it. There have been some recent studies done at University of California in Berkeley looking at hand contact in adults. Show it the next slide. using video cameras, they found that adults touch their face about 16 times per hour, about 2.5 times to the eyes, 5 times to the nose, and 8 times to the lips. So you're doing it all the time, largely subconsciously, even as an adult. And all of these actions can result in the transmission of diseases. If you're not aware of it, even the common cold can be transmitted by rubbing the virus into your eyes. Now, we've done studies with tracers, microsphere size of bacteria and viruses to see how they move in a building. We put them on people's hands or on doorknobs, and this next slide is shown. And we can come back within several hours and show that many of these surfaces are contaminated later. It's amazing, in an office we have a very active group of people. These microspheres move around very fast through the office, and within a day, they've contaminated many of the surfaces I've shown here. This is actually an example of a study we did showing that the microsphere is moved around the office during the day. So you're continually touching and interacting with your environment all the time without really recognizing it. And I think you have to relate this exposure in the public to life in the 21st century. In the next slide, I try to define some of the things that have changed in the 21st century and that are really affecting your exposure to fomites. Most of us spend most of our time indoors. Some people have estimated that the average adult spends 80% of his time indoors. That's traveling in a car, going to an office, you go home, you go to bed. Think about, or you go to a shopping mall. Think about it, again, that how often you are really indoors and how much time outdoors. Big contrast to maybe 120 years ago when most of us were working on farms and we spent a lot of our time outdoors. And more people work in offices than ever before in history. That number is approaching 70 to 80%, many people feel. Again, contrast to 50, 60 years ago when a lot of us were again working out on farms or outside, and maybe we only even went to town once a week in many cases. And we travel more than ever before in greater distances than ever before. In history, we spend more time in public places probably than any generation in history, too. If you think about it, you're going to the shopping mall, you're taking a bus, you're going to a football game. We build larger stadiums than ever. We build cruise ships larger than ever. So the size of these facilities are increasing, too. Just not that you're going to them, but the number of people you're sharing space with has increased dramatically in the last 30 or 40 years. And we're more mobile than ever before. We have electronic equipment. We have cell phones. We have iPods. We have computers. Basically, we're generation touch. We touch more common surfaces than more people have ever touched before in history. So you're really sharing more common surfaces with more people than ever in history. To reemphasize that, just think about how your environment, how you interact with it today, and how that was different than before. So in reality, you're in a situation where your exposure is actually on the increase to organisms that may be on these common surfaces. The next slide, I want to emphasize, you're bringing more people into buildings all the time. In cruise ships, I mentioned, sporting events, I mentioned, larger stadiums, recreation, holiday groups, houseboats, rafting trips. We bring people from all over the world, actually, to go on rafting trips, and they share that space together, or houseboats. Also, emergency situations, we have to put up housing situations. We had problems with hurricanes, for example, in the United States, where emergency housing had to come in, emergency medical care, and transported these people out of hurricane areas. And this created a situation where more and more people were brought together. They had to be housed in large facilities because of the emergency. So a lot of all these changes are really going on all the time and changing the nature of our contact and how we interact with our environment. In the next slide, I kind of want to give you why we're going to go through these different objects and look at the microbiology, geography, if you want to call it, of the environment you work in. And why are we interested in doing this? Well, we're trying to identify critical control points in these environments. And this is not only at home, work, play, shopping. What are those areas you're going to come in contact most often, and what are those objects are going to be the most contaminated you come in from? So this is kind of the geography of germs, if you have it, that I'm going to go through to give you an idea where you find a lot of germs. So let's take a couple of different situations I wanted to go through. One is going to work. What about going to work? There was actually an interesting study done in the United Kingdom, published recently, on bus travel and your probability of getting respiratory infections. And in this study, they found that the more you ride a bus, the more likely you will get a cold or a respiratory infection, 6 times more likely than if you didn't ride the bus. Again, a situation where large numbers of people are traveling in a vehicle and they're touching these surfaces. Many, many people, if you think about it, travel in buses. You know, we've done some studies looking at different types of transportation. My next slide, I give you a rough idea of the number of bacteria per 100 square centimeters for it. And interestingly, the commuter train, at least in our study in the United States, had the highest number of bacteria per 100 square meters, followed by a bus. Airplanes were next, interestingly enough. And the family car, somewhere around a little bit more than airplanes. I put a toilet seat here in that we tested in some of these facilities. I'm going to kind of use, as I go through this, the toilet seat as my gold standard here because it's often one of the cleanest objects we find, believe it or not, because many people are concerned about cleanliness of toilets, so they actually wipe a toilet seat before they sit down on it or put toilet paper on it. Actually, a study has shown that about 48% of the American women will actually wipe a public toilet seat or they will put paper on it before they sit down. So in reality, it makes the toilet seat one more of the cleaner objects you actually run across every day as you travel. The other thing that's interesting in the next slide, I gave you an idea of the number of coliform bacteria and E. coli that we have found on bus surfaces. I was quite surprised that about 70% of the surfaces tested included E. coli is one of them. Give you again a reference here. If you go around and do toilet seats in different facilities, you find only about 6% of the toilet seats have coliforms and E. coli on them. So you're actually, interesting enough, more likely to touch an object in a bus with an enteric bacteria than you are actually a toilet seat. Again, one object is clean regularly and the other probably is not, maybe at the end of the day that the buses are being used. The next slide is well, let's walk to work. What were you going to pick up when you walk to work? And the next slide, I'm showing the results. We had somebody walk through a floor in one case where we put about 100,000 bacteria in a small area and then about 10 million viruses. The red shown here is actually the bacterial results and the white, the virus results. The main point here isn't the numbers, but to show that you keep tracking it after step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, so on, you keep depositing viruses or bacteria that you picked up from one surface and move it to another. We've actually done studies on shoes, the microbiology of the bottom of the shoes, and basically 93% of all shoes have coliform bacteria or E. coli on the bottom after they've been worn for about 3 months. Just think about where you're walking all day and all the animals that may have used those same facilities. So it's not surprising in our studies that the first 3 feet as you walk into most houses have the most bacteria and mold on the floor, probably being deposited actually by your shoes as you walk into the house. So you're always picking up things at the bottom of your shoe you might recognize. You might want to think about that next time you put your shoes up on your desk to relax. Might not be a good idea to eat your sandwich in the same spot. The next slide concerns the environments where we find most contaminated with bodily fluids, to give you a rough idea. Bodily fluids, what do I mean by that? I mean mucus, saliva, urine, feces is largely what we were looking for. Maybe probably not surprising to a lot of people, where you find most of that is daycare centers because you have young children that really haven't developed good sanitary habits yet. Then playgrounds are number two. Again, we're dealing with children areas here that and a lot of the children may be small and that, so you find these bodily fluids more often on those surfaces. Bus travel, as I already pointed out, is quite interesting too. You find a lot of these fluids on those surfaces too. Parks and gyms, a lot of people interacting with equipment in those areas. Actually, theaters on this list, where you find most of the bodily fluids on theaters is actually the handrest there or the armrest there is where you find most of it because people are resting their hand there. But as you go down the list, you see it gets cleaner and cleaner. And quite, I think, nice about the whole situation is physicians' offices were the cleanest, probably because they really make an effort to clean these facilities because they have people who potentially are ill doing it. But there's quite a range. And basically, it shows you where children interact, bus travel, parks. We have a lot of people in the facility, and these are areas, buses and parks, that may not be clean until the end of the day or at all. And so you do see probably an accumulation of bodily fluids. And, of course, bodily fluids may contain microorganisms that potentially could make you ill. In the next slide, I give you an idea of an office or an office building, looking at the number of bacteria on these surfaces. I'm kind of using that as a rough measure of how clean an area is, although you will also find in this situation viruses and other organisms. But usually where you find most bacteria in office buildings, in lobbies of hotels, and in shopping malls is a phone, largely because they're not cleaned regularly or disinfected, so bacteria tend to build up on them. Next is the desktop, because desktops don't really get cleaned regularly or disinfected. Some people may clean them and use a sponge or a paper towel, and that just tends to spread things around. You really have to use a disinfectant. In fact, we found many people don't even clean a desktop, I think, until they start sticking to it. So it ends up being an area that gets heavily contaminated. I'm going to point that out later, how important desktops are. And then it kind of drops down to other commonly used areas like keyboards, computer, mice. And again, our gold standard in office buildings was the toilet seat again. I always tell people if there's ever an outbreak of any plague or anything, you should probably run to the restroom and sit on the toilet, because it looks like it's the safest place from what we can find in our studies. Interestingly enough, coffee preparation areas in office buildings tend to get fairly contaminated with coliform and E. coli bacteria. In investigating that, we found that coffee cups, 60% of them have coliform bacteria, and we do find E. coli occasionally. And we were able to trace that to the use of sponges or dishcloths that were used in the area. In E. coli and coliform bacteria will grow in dishcloths. So every time you wipe out a coffee cup with these, you deposit E. coli or coliform bacteria on it. It may probably originate from people not cleaning their hands, and the bacteria get into the sponge or rag, and they start growing. The other possibility is that raw meats may be prepared in the area or handled, or some other types of raw food products. The next slide is parainfluenza that we detected on office fomites in the fall of 2004. Now, most people associate influenza with children and respiratory diseases in children. But interestingly enough, in the fall, adults tend to get certain types of influenza. So you do get influenza fairly commonly. We were quite surprised how common influenza was. We actually followed around people who had respiratory infections, and the surfaces they touched, they were depositing influenza as they move, parainfluenza, excuse me, through the facility. Surprisingly enough, if we averaged all this, almost one-third of the surfaces we touch and that we detected also influenza viruses on the same surface. It varied a little bit from city to city, interestingly enough. But it was widespread throughout the United States in the fall of 2004. So if a coworker has a respiratory infection, he may be depositing that throughout a facility all the time. It's interesting in that we don't find influenza virus that often in office buildings. And our guess for that situation is that parainfluenza, it's a little bit worse, I'd say, symptom-wise than the common cold, but you tend to go to work. You're miserable, you're coughing, you're sneezing, your nose may be running, and you're spreading the virus all over. But influenza usually hits you hard enough that you stay home. So we tend not to find as much influenza, interestingly enough, as we do parainfluenza and cold viruses in buildings and facilities. The next slide, we did kind of a breakdown on what's a germiest profession in terms of number of bacteria on surfaces in different offices and office buildings. And by far, the germiest profession or office buildings in offices we could find were school teachers. much more, 20 times more than anybody else in terms of the number of bacteria on surfaces. And we believe that's largely because your small interaction with small children, maybe germ-laden or bacterial-laden tests and exams, I'm not sure there, but they really stood out and made a big difference. Bankers and accountants were actually fairly high on that list, too. We largely thought because it may be a relationship to how much time they're spending on their desks relative to lawyers and other professions who are more mobile and moving away from their desk area. Now we've done the work and going to work, why don't we go to school? And let's take a look at schools. We've done quite a survey on different grades in schools, and it's kind of interesting. If you look from kindergarten to fifth grade in terms of the number of bacteria and viruses, it doesn't change much from kindergarten, surprisingly enough. And then apparently when children reach puberty, they have a cleaner environment, and we notice a significant drop in the amount of viruses and bacteria that we found on surfaces. Right in this slide, I give an example of the averages for all the grades in that. And surprisingly enough, the cafeteria was the worst in terms of number of bacteria and how often we found viruses on those surfaces. Computer equipment in the classroom, which is becoming fairly common, was the next most contaminated, probably because of a lack of cleaning. And then the children's desktop was third. Again, probably a lack of disinfecting. It's personal property. They're probably not as clean as much. Again, I show the toilet seat result we got again here. Basically, if you had looked at the numbers, you have many more times bacteria on a kid's desk than you do a toilet seat. The next slide is looking for influenza virus in daycare centers. I'm giving an example here. We did a study over several years looking at the occurrence of influenza virus in daycare centers, and usually on fomites. And usually it does not appear until September. Before September, we could not find any influenza virus in daycare centers. And then steadily, as the influenza season during these years gained momentum, we found more and more influenza viruses on the surface, peaking in the years that we did this study in April and May when we found most of the influenza. And then it suddenly disappears again. End of May, we don't have any more influenza virus on the surfaces that we could detect. You see the same thing in children's classrooms. Apparently, for some reason, they may excrete more influenza virus in adults. I don't know. But you were more likely to find influenza virus in children's classrooms than we were in adult working places. Impact on absenteeism. The next slide. I briefly mentioned a study we did where we went into several schools, and at the end of the day in the third and fourth graders, we wiped the desktops down with a disinfectant. Now, we didn't tell the children which desks were being wiped down, and we compared the classrooms where the desks were not wiped down at the end of the day. And then we looked at absenteeism records, and it was quite surprising that we could reduce absenteeism rates in this age group by 50% in this case. Let's go to shopping and a little bit more with public schools. It's quite interesting when you go shopping what you're likely to find here. I'll give you an example. We've been doing a study on grocery carts here, and they're actually one of the more contaminated areas you might want to cross, surprisingly, how much goes on them. I mean, you have to read this seat right. You see here oftentimes is used to hold children, small children. I actually think half of the American children probably teethed on handlebars like this, riding in shopping carts. But people tend to put their meat products there, raw meat products, which could leak, or raw produce. And the next slide, you can see the results we got. We were quite surprised how often E. coli occurs on shopping carts, particularly in more northern latitudes, like Maine, Atlanta, Chicago, but not in Tucson, Arizona, quite surprisingly, largely because it's so hot there. I think all the bacteria are toasted on the shopping carts. It's so hot. But when you had more humid climates that were colder, you tended to find more E. coli. Interesting, with this, there was a recent study done, epidemiological study, which looked at association of salmonella and Campylor infections in children placed in shopping carts, and there was an increased risk of children placed in shopping carts of getting salmonella and campylobacter. Again, probably from the presence of raw meat products placed in the shopping cart, which leak and can get out of the shopping cart. Also, we remember, too, diaper-aged children are placed in shopping carts, too, which also may play a role. One of the other interesting areas we've been looking at is touchscreens. We've seen touchscreens come in grocery stores and other types of facilities where you check out yourself and you touch the screen here. You also see them in other facilities, too, like ATM machines would be another example. And basically the consumer, large numbers of consumers are touching these screens every day. And we did a number of studies isolating the numbers of bacteria. Quite surprising, I don't have them here, but you will find E. coli, MRSA, the bacteria. We found Clostridium, both perfringens and Clostridium difficile. We were able to find on these touch screens. Actually, it was quite interesting. We found MRSA more often on touch screens in grocery stores than we found in healthcare facilities. For some reason. Again, why do you see these here? Probably because of buildup, because they're not disinfected or cleaned on a regular basis. Again, I'm going to jump back a little bit to schools just to mention that children are common sources of viruses too, like influenza, noroviruses, and parainfluenza. You do find these viruses on desktops a lot. Interestingly enough, in public facilities like libraries, is a good example, or any place where you got a table where it's used communally, you will find these viruses. We find them quite frequently in office buildings on these surfaces, and that for some reason, desktops are not cleaned very well, or if they are, they're done with a cleaning tool that spreads the viruses around. That's why the next slide is an example of the impact of wiping tabletops in restaurant with cleaning cloths. On the left is the number of bacteria of E. coli on total coliforms and total bacteria in log numbers here relative to wiping and non-wiping. We actually went into a restaurant, sampled the table surface, and then sampled again after they wiped the surface, and we were able to find E. coli on it. So, again, cleaning tables, one of the problems maybe is the cleaning tools are spreading the bacteria from one surface to another. Let me go back to the grocery store on the next slide here. We did a recent study on coliform bacteria and E. coli in grocery shopping bags here. And it's quite surprising. These are the grocery bags, I should point out, that you are encouraged to put your groceries in, bring home, and next time you go grocery shopping, and bring them back again and back and forth. And what we found is about half of them had coliform bacteria, and about 10% of them had E. coli actually in them. And when we interviewed people in the next slide, only 3% of the people ever said that they actually ever cleaned these bags at all or ever thought about cleaning these bags at all. Again, they're reusing them for going groceries all the time. But interesting, when you talk to people, about 50% of the time, they use the bags for other purposes, such as taking their dirty laundry to the laundromat, putting their gym shorts in there, their shoes, books, whatnot. So these bags are used for a lot of different purposes. So that's probably how they get contaminated. Of course, here the concern is of cross-contamination, maybe with raw meat products used in one bag one time, and then contamination of produce used in the next time that the bag is used. We also found that when the bags were placed in the trunks of cars, which a lot of people claim they do, that the bacteria like E. coli could actually grow in the bag. So that's always a possibility, too. Again, this is a situation where people are being encouraged to recycle, but they also have to practice proper care of these reusable bags and wash them on a regular basis to avoid cross-contamination of foods. Well, let me talk about traveling now and your exposure to germs when you travel. Next slide. As a result of a study where we did total numbers of bacteria found in bathrooms in different hotel groups, we found when we'd done this study that there was a relationship between how much you paid for a room and how many bacteria you were sleeping with, I guess, basically, on it. And in this case, we did Rodac plates pressed on the various surfaces to get an idea of the number of bacteria on it. Again, not surprising here, the toilet seat always comes out the winner as the one of the cleanest surfaces, even in a hotel room. Why the difference, and this was statistically significant, by the way, in the price breakdown, is probably because maybe more diligence in the use of more costly cleaners and disinfectants actually did make a difference in how clean a room was, at least the hard surfaces in the room. Actually, I don't have it here, but one of the worst spots was the TV remote, because I think it's rarely disinfected, at least in many of the hotels that we studied. What about airplane trays? Well, many of us travel with airplanes, and how bad are airplanes, for example? And we've done a number of sampling of airplane trays. Now, there's no procedures or mandated by any government authority, at least, to clean or disinfect trays in airplanes and that. And we were able to find MRSA on several flights, actually, and norovirus we isolated from one flight. So you will find microorganisms of concern on these trays, largely because I just don't think there's any standardized procedures for cleaning them. Of course, the worst thing in an airplane that we were able to find in the next flight was the restroom. Again, I think it's largely because it's hard to clean up, wash up. It's hard to get your hands sometimes in the sink. The water shuts off. So they tend to be very, of all the restrooms we ever study, they tend to have the most bacteria and viruses. Again, on an average plane, you have 50 people per toilet to give you a rough idea of it. As part of the study, we were also timing people. If you ever wondered, here's some statistics of how long the different sexes spend in public restrooms, if you ever want to know that fact. What about public restrooms? That's always a concern in the back of everybody's mind, it seems. And there have been outbreaks associated with public facilities before. Shigella has been linked to outbreaks in toilets, salmonella, hepatitis A, norovirus, particularly probably more than any other virus has been, or organism has been linked to spread by public toilets. The next slide shows the isolation of coliforms and E. coli from public restrooms, the percent of the time we were able to isolate. And if you want a relative idea of this, the most time you find these organisms tend to be in airplane toilets, probably because of the heavy use during the day. The fast food restaurants came in next. The cleanest areas, as shown here, were hospital toilets, the public areas, largely probably because of the heavy use of disinfectants in hospital areas. So if you ever want on a trip and you want a really clean toilet, the best place is an emergency room toilet, I guess, because they tend to be the cleanest toilets we tend to run across. What about pathogens in toilets, getting them out? A lot of people don't recognize, as shown in the next slide, that when you actually flush a toilet, you get droplets ejected from the toilet. This is a time-lapse photograph of the toilet bowl flush. So you do get bacteria, particularly around the toilet area. They tend to largely be large droplets, so they don't go too far. So they tend to settle out more around a toilet floor area than anywhere else. But you do get viruses and bacteria ejected from the toilet when you flush it. Next slide, where do you find pathogens? So we did some studies on trying to isolate bacterial pathogens, and the only organism we ever had success with was salmonella, and it was always in the sink areas, in the sink handle areas where we found the organism. Probably because this area is wet, it's moist, the bacteria like salmonella can survive longer in these types of environments. Also, you have to turn the water on usually in many public restrooms before you can wash your hands, so you contaminate the sink handles. And, of course, unfortunately, you have to turn the water off, so you may recontaminate your hand, which is something to think about. The next slide gives you an idea of number of times you find coliforms and E. coli in stalls. We've actually done studies to look at public restrooms of different sizes to look at this. And interestingly enough, your first stall, if you only have one stall in a public restroom, it's most contaminated. Logically, that makes sense because it's the only one to use. But if you have more stalls, it believe it or not, it tends to be the middle stalls, the third stalls. Sometimes we find quite a bit of contamination too, but it does seem to occur throughout a public restroom. So another thing to maybe be aware of. Now, interestingly enough, female restrooms, as shown in the next slide, are significantly more contaminated than men's restrooms. Largely, we believe, because they bring small children in there more often, they're changing diaper age, so they tend to get a little bit more contaminated. In women's restrooms, for some reason, the middle stall tends to be a little bit more contaminated. The punchline on public toilets is that the hospitals have the cleanest toilets and airports the worst. The next slide, I want to talk to you about something, research we've been involved on, refillable liquid soap dispensers. This shows one here of a refillable liquid soap dispenser being refilled. These refillable liquid soap dispensers have been traced to outbreaks in hospitals, so they're not recommended for hospitals, because one of the problems you get is shown in the next slide. You get large numbers of bacteria growing in some of these refillable soap dispensers. And they can grow to very large numbers. In our survey here, we tested 540 some soap dispensers. In those with more than 500 bacteria per milliliter of soap was about 25% of them, and then about 16% contained more than a million bacteria in them. So some bacteria can grow to very large numbers. For this reason, now almost all of those bacteria are coliform bacteria that we have found in the liquid soap dispensers, and that we have found on a few occasions E. coli growing in them. So you'll get Enterobacter, Serratia growing in the liquid soap dispensers, which certainly may be a concern in medical areas in that too. What other types of bacteria may grow in it, maybe it has, is not really clear. And these bacteria do stay on your hands after you wash your hands and clean them, we found out. Other people have found out too. The next slide shows that probably the idea would be to move to the non-refillable type liquid soap dispensers, because these are sealed at the factory. The trouble with the refillable ones, you're always adding water in there. You might not actually have the right dilution of water to soap, and so you'll get coliform bacteria growing in them. The next slide gives you a rough idea on the occurrence of MRSA bacteria in the community. We've done some studies on that outside of hospitals largely. Generally, when you start looking at cars, automobiles, buses, offices, you find a fairly low incidence if you're surveying, maybe only 2% of the surfaces that we have tested, do you run across MRSA in the environment. Interestingly enough, where we found a lot of MRSA was in firehouses where firemen lived in that. And largely it occurred in sofas and other types of furniture that had cloth. It seemed to be something related to cloth furniture for some reason. Not quite sure why, but maybe difficult to remove or clean from those surfaces. In homes with individuals with MRSA, we found in about 30% of the surfaces. Interestingly enough, hair brushes were very high for some reason, about 50% of the hair brushes. It may be something to do with skin or persistence, but that stood out of all the objects we tested where we were finding MRSA actually in the environment. So one of the questions, you go through all this geography of germs exercise here, and you go, like, why aren't we getting ill all the time? You know, you've been showing we find viruses, we find bacteria that potentially could cause illness. So why don't we see more infections all the time? Well, it's all a matter of probabilities, of the right series of events happening, of touching the right surface with the right types of organisms, transferring them effectively to your fingers or hand, and then bringing your hands to your nose, mouth, or eyes without washing them. So it's really an odds game of this happening. How often will it happen, and what are the odds, and the number of organisms that are going to be involved too. So you do have a certain amount of exposure all the time. However, you have to recognize the more contaminated surfaces are, both in terms of the number of surfaces and the number of organisms, will increase your odds of getting infected. So as we see larger office buildings, larger stadiums, larger cruise ships, with more people touching common surfaces, your odds of actually having the right series of events or the right probability increases over time. And so that probably should put greater emphasis, I think, on maintaining proper hygiene every time you're in a public place, because your exposure is always getting greater when you do these types of events. You have to recognize that. The whole game, of course, is to keep the odds in your favor all the time. It's always a gamble, and you want the odds to be in your favor and not the microbes' favor all the time. But we do have to recognize all the changes going on around us all the time and how these odds are going to change all the time and the probabilities of being exposed to of pathogens of the different virulence all the time. And as society changes, your exposure is going to change. Different routes of exposure, greater interaction with your environment. Again, if you really think about it, you're the touch generation. You're touching more surfaces than anybody ever touched before. And as we modify those surfaces, the probability of you picking something up may change too. One more point I wanted to make on that was that you're more likely to pick up a virus from a stainless steel surface than you are a dollar bill, for example, or an acrylic surface, even more likely to pick up a virus or a bacteria from an acrylic surface than you are a laminar type of surface. So as we modify our environment too, we may change our risk of our probability of picking up the right number of organisms to actually cause an infection. I don't think many people have really thought about that in a sense, we could modify our environments to reduce our probability of actually picking up an organism in our hand. And that may be one of the future strategies that could be used. And the last slide, I just want to go over probably what many people are aware of, the importance of hand washing. What do you really do about it? I mean, there have been numerous studies on the impact of hand washing and disease reduction. And what has been found is that about 30 to 50% reduction in illness probability by proper hand washing. Alcohol gel sanitizers, there have been several studies that show that the similar results can be had with the use of alcohol gel sanitizers. An important thing if you're in public places, you can't get to wash your hands as frequently as you'd like. So alcohol gel sanitizers is playing a role in that. And disinfection of fomite surfaces, I gave you the example of the school absenteeism reduction by 50%, which was published, by the way, in the Journal of School Nursing. I don't think that's been looked at as much as it should be, is what is the impact in disease reduction in public places by properly disinfecting these surfaces on some regular routine basis. There may be an opportunity here of reducing the risk of infection to greater levels than many people may have anticipated. The key here is targeting those key surfaces that are high-touch areas rather than trying to disinfect everything in public places. It probably doesn't really make sense. But if we target key areas like this area, the only thing in the schools we actually disinfected was the children's desks, and yet had a big impact, at least on absenteeism. And finally, other strategies can be used in other environments and other types of disinfectants in that. And I think I'll leave my geography of germs lecture, if you have it, here. And I hope more people in the future will actually contribute to studies looking at what we're really exposed to in public environments and how we might actually reduce that exposure in the future. Thank you.
Well, thanks very much, Chuck. And that's a fascinating overview of the soup of contagion that we live in, and I really sort of appreciate the fact that you said that obviously we're not all sick all the time, so there are a lot of things that we can do to prevent this. And I was interested, in your talk you mentioned over and over that areas where there's a presence of children is where we see the highest number of bacteria and viruses on surfaces. And I was wondering in terms as well as if we wanted to try to prevent a lot of this, really somewhere we should be focusing is educating children, educating people around children in terms of what they can do to try to prevent that. And I was wondering what, you did mention in the study about the 50% reduction in absenteeism in the school where they clean the surfaces. Were they looking at as well in terms of hand hygiene in that setting, and that made a difference?
No, in that particular study, we didn't look at hand hygiene. We just wanted to see what a surface would do. But that's an excellent question. There was another study published where they looked at both disinfecting the children's desks in areas and also hand hygiene. And in that study, they looked primarily at gastroenteritis. And there, they were able to reduce the amount of gastroenteritis among the children by 30%. Now, that study that I actually just cited was absenteeism, so there could have been other reasons for absenteeism by illness. But in the study, once they specifically look at illness, they had about a 30% reduction by combining hand hygiene and disinfecting surfaces by 30%. So that did seem to work out fairly well. And I think what you would really want, I think, in the future is both coupling disinfecting key surfaces and hand hygiene to optimize the reduction in exposure, particularly in children. Somebody always asked me, where's the most place I'm scared to go to in terms of picking up an illness? And I always tell them a daycare center, you know, just mm-hmm. based on the studies of what you see there. Because children tend to excrete a lot of viruses, in particular, for long periods of time after infection, much longer than an adult, because probably a lack of previous exposure. So even though they may look healthy, they're excreting these organisms for longer periods of time. So their environment tends to be much more contaminated.
Mm-hmm. I've got a couple of questions for you. I get asked quite often with all the hand hygiene stuff that we do, what about children and developing their immune system? There are people who believe they have more allergies, more asthma, et cetera, because we're using too much, whatever, bleach or other things. So I just wonder how you answer that question. And I'll just throw in my other two questions really quickly. Toilet seat lids, our health authority chose not to use them because of all the handling, but I'm wondering if it would be much better even with the handling, given what you showed us. And paper, I often get asked about all the magazines lying around.
Yeah, those are all good questions. You know, the first one is always like to touch on, you know, particularly, well, are we too clean? You know, somehow there's a theory out there, the hygiene hypothesis, you know, that getting ill makes us healthier out there. And really, the evidence isn't really firm on that. It goes either way all the time. But, you know, in our studies and looking at exposure to microorganisms, we actually believe exposure is up to more different types of microorganisms, not down. From if we look at public places, if we look at laundry, we don't use hot water anymore hardly for laundry, and so our clothes are germier than our grandparents. So actually, I think exposure to germs is actually increased. For a lot of the reasons I just gave in public places. Your comment about toilet seats is a good one, too. Lids, they do tend to get heavily contaminated because of the flushing of the toilet. The bottom of the toilet seat, if the lid is down, gets contaminated all the time. So I'm always leery of opening them up all the time for that reason. So maybe the removal is not such a bad idea, if that's what you're referring to. You know, it's interesting. Paper, it was a good example. We've tested about a dozen surfaces for transfer of bacteria, spores, and viruses of different types. And the least thing you get anything off of is paper money. I mean, you could chew paper money probably and never get anything off it. Everything seems to stick to it, never comes off. Where you go to an acrylic plastic surface or stainless steel, you know, you'll remove 50 to 80% of the organisms on there. So if the world was coated with money, it would probably cut down a lot of disease transmission.
Thanks a lot.
Sure.
I was wondering about all the different kinds of disinfectants that are out there and your comment about the cold water washing as well. Are there some disinfectants that you found that are less harmful to surfaces but are more effective cleaners?
Yeah, of course, disinfectants are not necessarily cleaners. They're incorporated into cleaning and cleaning products, which I think is a good idea, that you can clean and disinfect on the surfaces. But I think, yeah, some disinfectants you have to be careful on certain types of surfaces. Others are more gentle to surfaces, like quaternary ammonium compounds, for example. But then one of the issues with quaternary ammonium compounds, they're not effective against the norovirus very well, and some of the other enteric viruses, while they may do well against, like, respiratory viruses like influenza. So there's kind of a trade-off there, you know, like using hydrogen peroxide base and bleach will get your range of organisms you're concerned about, where quats are going to be much more limited, but they're safer to use on surfaces.
Bruce, this is Paul. I have a question.
Chuck,
where do you fall with the use of microfiber cloths for cleaning? Are they more effective than paper or cotton rags?
They certainly accumulate more microorganisms, and our study is looking at them. If you test a cotton cloth after it's been used versus a microfiber cloth, you find a lot more bacteria in a microfiber cloth. So you're going to reuse it after it, at the end of the day or whatever time you feel appropriate. You have to make sure you wash it quite carefully because there's a lot more organisms on it than there is the other type of cloths. They are actually more effective from what I've read, though, than cotton cloths, although they do have a capacity. From some studies I've read, they tend to lose their effectiveness over regular cotton cloths after maybe 25 to 50 uses, heavy use in that. So it may vary. That's what the literature has said, but there may be newer versions of microfiber cloths. But you have to make sure you care for these microfiber cloths well, because they do a job of accumulating many more organisms. So you want to make sure you decontaminate it before you use it again.
I was wondering about references for some of the studies. They're so excellent.
I can always provide that to you, Paul, if you like the references. Some of these are published in journals or are in press, much of the stuff that I actually quoted.
If you can provide them to me, I will post them in the same area as the handout notes and the slides.
Okay.
Thank you.
That's great. Well, then I'll take the opportunity to once again thank Dr. Chuck Durba for a fascinating talk. And as well, I want to thank everybody for on the line who joined us for today. I think that it was well worth it. And as well, once again, thank Virox Technologies for sponsoring today's talk. If you do have any further questions for Dr. Gerba, you can send them to info@webertraining.com, and Paul will forward them to Dr. Gerba to answer. And other than that, I'll sign off and say thanks again, and be talking to you all again soon.